maybe you don't feel like talking to people in the morning of the race, but see if you can just make eye contact and deliver someone a smile. And it's amazing. Like they say, smiles are the kisses of the soul.
Welcome to the Athlete's Compass podcast. Each week, renowned sports scientist and founder of Athletica AI, Dr. Paul Larson, athlete, coach, and sports scientist Mariana Rakai, and coach and cyclist Paul Warlowski discuss training, racing, and improving your health and fitness. Get ready for your journey to peak performance. Hello and welcome to the Athlete's Compass podcast, where we navigate training, fitness, and health for everyday athletes. Most endurance athletes, not just elites, feel anxious before their A event. Research suggests that 70 to 80% of runners and cyclists report significant pre-race nerves. It's the body's fight or flight response getting triggered by a perceived threat, even if that threat is from a start line. From a physiological standpoint, what's happening in the body when we feel those race nerves? Why might that response, which evolved for physical danger, show up so strongly? So let's talk about that a little bit. Paul, what's happening in the body when we feel those pre-race nerves?
Yeah, well, the good old amygdala is what they say. And it's the body's fight or flight mechanism, area in the brain that basically just fires up the prehistoric brain. And it was there, to protect us ultimately, right? Like it's doing a job. But of course, it's less about that real danger. It's kind of like this perceived danger. It's our job ultimately to try to find out strategies to kind of deal with it, because it's there. And we've all experienced it, myself included. We just spoke about it in the last podcast with Ashley. So yeah, if you haven't already listened to that one, you want a deep dive into some of the various different things that are going on, it's, you know, please check that out. But yeah, that's about it, man. It's fight or flight, sympathetic nervous system. Ah, we're gonna danger. That's what we're perceiving. But actually, I thought really there was one profound moment that really struck me, and I learned on the podcast with Ashley, and she said that that emotion that you're feeling, it's really there for like just a fleeting moment, and mm-hmm. in fact, like 90 seconds. It can theoretically be cleared. But the problem is, as we spoke on the podcast, it's like you stay in that kind of that monkey mind. And it basically is just these three areas in the brain that just kind of keep cycling around. And that's when, anxiety and depression, that's where it comes from. And then we know that if we can break that pathway, and there's lots of different ways you can do that, then all of a sudden you can get out of that monkey mind and out of that emotion and out of that fight or flight response, which don't forget also is there for a reason. Like you actually want this. I'm sorry, now it's my turn to go on at long a little bit here. But basically, as you guys know, I was just recently around the world, Japan and Belgium, and speaking to a lot of these Olympic organizations. And one of the things that the practitioners were asking about was the topic of heart rate variability, which you guys all have access to if you're using Athletica. And one of the things that we see is we see heart rate variability falling below the normal on race day. And often we think, oh, HRV high equals good, low equals bad. Well, no, low is good on race day. You want the sympathetic system appearing to kind of come out there, because that sympathetic nervous system is there to make you perform to the best of your ability. So yeah, long-winded answer to your question there, Paul, that basically you can kind of flip the whole thinking process to say, yeah, on race day, anxiety, but it's there for a reason. All is good, and it's going to help me perform well today. Let's do it.
Are there some examples that you two or the three of us have of a race morning when we felt overly anxious, and how did that affect the pacing and the warm up?
I was reflecting on my first Ironman. I think like that was just like pretty overwhelm. I was a 19-year-old, and this was just daunting. I can just remember the butterflies. It was just like I could feel my heart actually beating. Like you could just like it was just right there. And I think we've all had that. It was just like, Yeah, because I knew I had a big mental barrier to tackle. And as everyone will probably recognize, all of a sudden, you know, 5 minutes into that swim after you get in your head chopped off with with your friend's elbow and whatnot, but you eventually kind of get into that rhythm again, and it's like, okay, now I'm doing what I've trained for, and now I'm starting to feel good, and you just get into your rhythm. But man, just like, yeah, all that adrenaline before the gun goes off is not an easy thing to handle.
MJ, yeah. What about you?
I shared my the orienteering. I couldn't get out of this bus.
Yeah,
I was so anxious as a little girl. But after that, I would say probably the first Ironman I was very emotional. Like, it meant so much, and you're so unsure if you can even finish the thing. And then I get into the water and start, you know, way too fast. And, you know, a few hundred meters in, I'm like hyperventilating and like, why can't I breathe? Why can't I breathe? Like, oh my God, I had to stop and look at my watch, and I was going way too fast. And then I realized, oh, okay, I'm just a little too anxious. So took a deep breath and got into it slowly, and then it was good. But yeah, I didn't realize that I was so anxious that I was just started too fast.
Yeah.
It's all that adrenaline.
So funny, now I'm as a parent, I still get this, but I get this for my daughter, watching my daughter swim. And it's like, yeah, it's like I'm, but you know what? She has some friends, unfortunately, they have they get these panic attacks. And they're like her friend competitors, right? And they get to the place where they actually can't handle that. And they'll unfortunately actually have to withdraw, because just like Mariana on the bus, was just so, the adrenaline is so high, and you don't necessarily have the coping mechanism to be able to figure things out, and they just withdraw. So yeah, this is where speaking to people like Ashley to get a hold of that can be really important.
Yeah, I think we all know a few young athletes that they are so nervous they start vomiting, or they just can't, like, in some physical way can't cope with all the anxiety. So I think it's more common than we realize. Yeah.
But again, like we alluded to in the podcast with Ashley, is like, a lot of it kind of comes down to rehearsal. The best thing you can do is to prepare yourself for that event. So the more this is where it really, you know, we've spoken about this before in other podcasts, but there shouldn't be too many surprises on race day. Again, if in the Athletica context, if you're doing the pieces that are preparing you, and you're kind of putting mind to physical output together, that's the preparation phase. You should be kind of linking those as best you can. And that goes right down to probably, you know, race day nutrition too, as well, right? Like, trying to kind of do things that are sort of similar in those key sets. That's your best defense against those race day nerves, because then when you have them, you can kind of say, no, I've done all these things. I've got that. I've really put the training in place. I've got this, you know. And it's it's very difficult in that first time, but the more you rehearse and do these, just like my daughter in the swimming context, where the coaches are starting them off the blocks repeatedly. They just do like just the first little bit again, random starts. And so there's no surprises to be able to execute on what it is that you're supposed to do.
What about dad?
That's the problem. Dad, they don't rehearse dad for dad. I just get this big bolus of cortisol and adrenaline, and I got to deal with it, but that's life.
Paul, what about you?
I can remember really clearly cyclocross nationals several years ago. It was in Madison, so it was close, and I had been racing a lot and doing well, and just worked myself up into mental mess. And I'm sure that my cortisol levels were, you know, ridiculous, like, all week beforehand. And it just blocked me. I had a terrible race and I just couldn't get into a groove. You know, in cyclocross, is a lot of getting off the bike and running and having these obstacles. And it just felt like my head was not attached to my body. I wasn't, you know, I couldn't just ride my bike. And it definitely affected me. But then there's other times where I was thinking at Gravel Nationals, where I came into it knowing that my fitness was a little bit suspect because I was just fatigued. But I had a different mental attitude where it was kind of like, yeah, screw it. I'm going to have fun. This is a beautiful course and I'm just going to go ride my bike. And that made a difference in the race. You know, but I just bring up these two national events and these stakes feel high for everyday athletes when we have one or two key events. You know, there are A goals. You add in travel, you add in logistics and family watching, you know, anxiety spikes. How do we, when we have these limited race opportunities, one Ironman a year, how do we deal with the nerves that come from putting a lot of emphasis on one event?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, Paul. How long's a piece of string? Like, it's just because, like we said, like the more you have, like this repetition thing is mm-hmm. is a key defense against it. But what if you don't have the opportunity to do that? Well, maybe there are mental rehearsals that you can actually do. And again, go back to my daughter. I know she works on actually her mental rehearsal, so she's actually putting herself up on the starting blocks. And they do this as a team as well, right? Like they are rehearsing in their mind the actual entire sprint event, right? And they're going right through it and feeling that whole thing. So it's you know, there's similar tricks that any endurance athlete can do as well. And I used to do this too. It's like I'd actually go and mentally rehearse when I'm just like, and you know, maybe meditation isn't for everyone, but for me, I really got a lot of value out of just laying down and actually going through in my mind all the various different actions that would likely that I wanted to happen on that day. That really helped me just going through. And this can be right up to the start too, right? Where you even know you're going to feel that anxiety, right? Like you're arriving in the town where the race is going to be and, you know, going through all the various different pre-race rituals and the final training sessions and the, you know, the race nutritions and, or the, you know, the pre-diet meals and those sorts of things. You can rehearse back as much as you want, but at the end of the day, it is your, back to what Ashley said, it's that emotion that's getting away. And, so you can prepare yourself and rehearse beforehand, to be ready for it. MJ, like, what do you think? You've done this so many times. Like, how did you do it for Nice, for the World Champs?
Nice was pretty much, it was so short. There was no time to think about anything. It was just execute the race plan and race preparation plan. I have two things, though. Like, write a race plan starting from equipment, nutrition, a few days before, and I ask my athletes to do this too. They write a race plan, including what happens. You have to imagine if something goes wrong during the race and what will you do? So they feel like they are prepared for anything, right? Mm-hmm. So writing a race plan is a good kind of like pre-game preparation. You know what to expect and you know what to focus on. But the other one is, if you are someone who gets anxious and really serious, smile. What takes the edge off? It's smiling. Find somebody to talk to, have that connection, human connection, because it just like drops your cortisone down and you like human connection, like what's better than that, right? You see a lot of people in the big races that just are so, you know, tunnel visioned and they are super anxious. So I try to, I always try to smile and, you know, chat with people, not just for me, but also for others.
Yeah, so good. And that was one of the other ones I was reflecting on when I was listening to Ashley in the psychology podcast that we just did. And yeah, that is another coping mechanism that I see my daughter doing in the swimming context. Is she's quite a social little butterfly, and she's around there talking with her friends and whatnot. And I know why she's doing that, because she's alleviating that anxiety and that stress, mm-hmm. because that human to human connection, and you're sharing that connection with someone else is probably feeling the same anxiety that you are. Mm-hmm. But you're so right, MJ, whereas not everyone's doing that, right? Like a lot of people are just head down and I got my job to do, right?
Yeah.
Don't talk to me for goodness sakes.
Yeah.
I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Stay away.
Yeah.
So different personality types, I think.
Totally. Yeah. And that's okay.
Yeah. Another way of coping with that raised anxiety is self-efficacy, you know, that belief that you can handle what's coming. That studies show that athletes who rehearse scenarios, like you're talking about, visualizing success and relying on those process goals, experience less pre-race stress. So how can athletes build that sense of self-efficacy, you know, physiologically or psychologically in the final weeks before the race? You know, Mariano, you know, that idea about, you know, writing a race plan. I mean, that's a really good idea.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It is. I'm reflecting on Athletica athlete Luke Evans right now, who's preparing for Ironman Arizona, right? And he's another big build after his Ironman Canada win. And look, I see him in practice. He's doing exactly what we recommend, where he's doing the key sets within Athletica, and he's reflecting on them, and he's executing. He's rehearsing pieces of Ironman Arizona that he's about to do. We all have that opportunity to do, and we can see, you know, where our power is sitting, where our heart rate's sitting, how it's tracking at any one given time across those sets. And we, you know, this is kind of, we're anchoring in our pacing that we're going to be doing, right? So now we're bringing that element in as well. And the more our pacing is going to be optimal, the more confidence that's going to give us about executing, and that should reduce the anxiety. But again, to what you were sort of saying, the other thing that we're working on is a race plan, and specifically in the context of an Ironman, a nutrition plan, because we've done some work in that area. So now we want to have a game plan on what it is we're going to be aiming to do. Cause you know, again, you have a plan, but you have to recognize that that's only a plan. And on D-Day, it's sometimes the plan can just go right out the window and you got to improvise.
Self-efficacy, like a little bit related what Ashley said, not sugarcoating it, but also what you always say, hay is in the barn, Paul. And when it's race week or race day, I tell myself I'm right where I'm supposed to be, because exactly. There's nothing else I can do. Like today is, you know, like I'm at the fitness that I am. Like now it's too late to, you know, regret anything. And let's see what the body and mind will, like how it will perform. But I'm like, this is the right spot. I'm where I'm supposed to be. And be okay with it.
Mm-hmm. You know, we also talked about, you know, those rituals that we do before the race, you know, creating a race plan, visualizing, having a checklist. How much of that should be physical? How much should be mental? Or should it just be both all the time?
I think it is both. When you are, you know, MJ started this one, but basically like when you're writing that plan down, right? Like there's clearly a mental component. Like you're locking in your mind what it is that you're hoping to do. And there's always a direct link, the psychological to the physical. It's just a really, really good process. And then when the alarm goes off on race morning, it's like, yep, let's go. Here we go. Mm-hmm. It's just like, yeah. And it's just, everything's just kind of clockwork. But again, also recognizing, and I think you can rehearse this too. When you're doing your mental rehearsals, you can actually rehearse something not going right. And how am I going to respond to that? Right. Because you've got a choice in any given moment. Are you going to react? Or are you going to respond? And you want to respond in an appropriate way. And if you're kind of ready for that, it's like, oh, something goes wrong. I come off the bike. What am I going to do now? How bad is it? Reset, assess the whole thing. Can I get my bike going again and moving forward, or whatever it may be? Like imagine all the various different things that can go wrong. And it's okay to do that, because then again, you're ready for all the various different circumstances, but again, you're going to respond. You're not going to react and spit the dummy and DNF necessarily. Actually, I wanted to mention that in the Ashley podcast that we did, the biggest regret moment that I ever had, it was when I had a mental blunder in Ironman Kona, World Champs, and I walked off the course at 5 miles into the marathon, and you know, ashamed of myself for doing that. But because I didn't need to do it. It stuck with me the rest of my race and career, which is great. So I got a positive out of it. But at the time, I was in a dark, dark place because I reacted and I didn't respond appropriately for the situation. I clearly could have just kept walking a little bit longer, knowing I would have picked back up and finished that race. That's what I should have done, because I was in no means in a place where, you know, I was going to hurt myself. So yeah, there's my 2 cents for you.
Yeah. It's tough in the heat of the moment to do the right thing.
Well, I was a young athlete at that point, young inexperienced athlete with a big ego on my in myself as well too, right? And that was the reason, because I knew I wasn't going to, you know, get to the level that I anticipated, right? And mm-hmm. This is always, it's always like reality versus expectations that in mm-hmm. terms of where you're going to, you know, how you're going to feel, position the feeling of your success or not. And I knew already that I wasn't going to perceive it as a successful event. So therefore I made the decision. Unfortunately, I reacted with the decision to just walk off the course, which was an error that I lived with. It turned into a good learning experience.
Yeah. You know, very similar to mine.
Which one? The orienteering one?
No, this was a cross country ski race. I had I was talented, so I used to win, and then I started not winning anymore, and mm-hmm. that was really hard thing for me to get over. And at some point, like I was this one race, I was like 30 seconds behind or like something impossible to catch up anymore, and I just like, oh.
Yeah.
I just gave up, and I still remember that uphill. I still remember exact moment. It's crazy. Like how you just like kind of hang on to it and swear that you would never ever DNF anymore. So I guess
isn't it so interesting how our podcast on anxiety has kind of shifted into ego and expectations. another kind of, you know, totally part of the mind, so valid from that perspective, but in fact, kind of a little bit different than the anxiety thing. Well, it's similar. There's similar elements, and it's interesting that both of us have experienced that. Paul, anything similar for you?
Yeah, I mean, with that cyclocross nationals, it was all about my ego. It was all about expectations of, you know, I wanted to do well. I wasn't going to win. But I wanted to do, you know, I wanted the top 10, and I thought that that might be reasonable. And that was what all I thought about, whether I acknowledged that or not, it was definitely in the back of my head. So, you know, you're very right. Those expectations and the shoulds, you know, that's one of the things that Ashley was talking about. The shoulds, you know, really got to me. And it sounds like that's kind of a common theme. That's where the anxiety of, can we possibly measure up to the expectations that we've created for ourselves?
Yeah, big time.
So we've come up with some ideas about rehearsal. We've come up with ideas about, you know, creating a plan or rituals, be very specific about what we're doing, our nutrition. We're in the start chute, and even well-prepared athletes, you know, that adrenaline spike when the countdown starts, you know, in cyclocross, it's, you know, the start can be in any 30 seconds. And the same with your daughter for swimming. It can be any time. Breathing exercises, positive cue words, brief muscle relaxation techniques can help reset the nervous system. But, you know, what's the mechanism behind the breathing? How does that actually work when you're relaxing lowering anxiety?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good question. So again, it comes down to that default mode network. And there's there's just these three areas in the brain, and that's the monkey mind. Remember, they figured out the default mode network when they were doing a control condition. So the story goes basically that the people were sitting in the control guys were sitting in the MRI machine, and they told the control subjects, don't think of anything. Just don't think of anything. And of course, it's like, okay, so imagine you're sitting in this big tube, right? This MRI machine. And of course, the monkey mind just goes off, right? And they're like, we're telling these people not to do any, not to think of anything. And then so there, whatever is on that person's mind, they're off and it's racing away, right? And so that's kind of how they sort of, that's really where the anxiety loop begins. And if you have a race coming up, then you're going to be anxious about that race, and you're just going to keep thinking about it and thinking all the potentially the negative things that could be going on. So we need mechanisms to all of a sudden stop that. And you mentioned breathing, Paul, and breathing is one way. Now, it's almost like a meditative technique, right? But if you can just try it right now listening to this, but imagine if you were to just grab onto your breath and actually take a deep breath in, and actually only pay attention to that, and then take a deep breath out and actually follow the breath along. Don't think of anything else. Just think of that breath, and same thing in and out. And now if you've done that for a certain loop and you haven't been distracted and gone back into the monkey mind and the default mode network, you've broken the loop that I just told you about that was detected in the MRI machine. And yeah, we all succumb to this pattern. Everyone has a monkey mind, every single one of us. So you're not alone. This is the human experience. And it comes down to each individual figuring out their own means of getting out of their that mental loop.
I don't know if you can see this on the podcast here, but there's I've tattooed the word breathe onto my arm.
Oh, yeah. Nice, Paul.
You know, simply because that's such an important thing to me for relaxing. Not even relaxing. That's not the right word. Bringing my focus back to the task at hand and being okay with whatever is about to happen. And I think that the breathing techniques that you just talked about, Paul, box breathing, where you inhale and then hold it for a couple seconds and then exhale for a couple seconds and hold that for a couple seconds, that's been shown, and those are easy things to do on the start line.
They really are. Yeah.
I would say also pick something, just notice something, a banner, say it out loud, red banner. Yeah. Notice things around you that will bring you back to now. And even better if you sing a song or dance with the usually in Ironman start line, it's a big party, so just wiggle your body a little bit.
Yeah, but all of these methods they make you they bring you back to the present, right? Mm-hmm. And even what MJ was talking about with respect to talking to other people, when you're actually talking to other people as opposed to keeping your head down and just not looking at anyone in the pre-race mode, you have to be present in those mm-hmm. in those conversations. So that also is interrupting the default mode network in the brain. And just the breathing is also another method. There's so many different ones, right? And again, we spoke about it in the Ashley podcast. This is why exercise is very good for this, because it lowers, even though we still do it dissociate during zone two type training. If you ever do a key set, join us in Velocity. You've got to focus on hitting your target, right? As you both two Velocity coaches here know oh too well, right? You've got to hit that target. Or you've got to even develop your feel if MJ is going to blind you to the power. And when she's being so mean as a coach, right? You've got to focus on trying to hit that power. You can't. There's no way you can think about other things. So that's why you go away from that session feeling just so good because all of a sudden you've been forced out of your monkey mind. You've been forced out of your default mode network. And it feels great to do that. That's why, one of the reasons why I think a lot of us listening do this thing of exercising and training and having that goal and that purpose, it's just all part of keeping, like having good mental health. Even though we often all think about the physical health, man, the mental health is just so important.
So to wrap up this episode, what advice would we give to everyday endurance athletes on race day?
Smile.
Smile? I like it.
Yeah, smile is good. Breathe, as Paul says.
Mm-hmm.
And don't forget to do all the rehearsals beforehand that are going to help you with the actual feeling, giving you the confidence on that day. And then just time to get back in and execute. You can do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like focusing on those process goals that we've talked about in other podcasts where we're not looking at a result, but we're looking at stay steady up the mountain, up the hill, be smooth in the corners, whatever it might be, just that process and the parts that you've rehearsed already. I think that's going to help you calm yourself because it's like, you've done this before.
Yeah. And you know which one I haven't heard it mentioned yet, but it's kind of similar to the one that Mariana said about talking to people. And maybe you don't feel like talking to people in the morning of the race, but see if you can just make eye contact and deliver someone a smile. And it's amazing. Like they say, smiles are the kisses of the soul. And it's almost like so it's not just smiling for the sake of smiling, but smile and also connect to someone else's eyes. And smile, or you might even make them smile back, and that's that can be another good moment as well. Because I've always felt like that Ironman or racing in general, like there's something just about this human experience about it. Like it's just like it's part of magic and life, and why we're here.
Yeah, totally. I was gonna say it's the connecting with other humans and sharing their experience, which is so hard for every single one who stand on the start line. Like we're sharing that human experience and all the journeys and all the pains and struggles and challenges that we meet every day in our lives, like when we're preparing for the event and now it's a party time. Like it's party, like let's do this.
Yeah. And we're moving to another important pearl that we haven't mentioned. Well, we mentioned a little bit. I think you mentioned it, MJ, but it's gratitude as well, because you about to do this are one of the blessed individuals because you have the capacity to be able to go and race. And just think of everyone out there on the course who are watching you. They want to be in your shoes. Like, so you want to be racing, you want to be doing this. So you want to be feeling that anxiety. So flip that as well. And, you belong and just enjoy this moment.
Great way to end the episode. Thank you for listening today to the Athlete's Compass podcast. Take a moment now, subscribe, share, and let's keep navigating this endurance adventure together. Improve your training with the science-based training platform Athletica and join the conversation at the Athletica Forum. For Mariana Rakai and Dr. Paul Larson, I'm Paul Werlowski, and this has been the Athlete's Compass podcast. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed another episode of the Athlete's Compass podcast, your North Star through the sometimes complicated world of training for your endurance sport. We appreciate your comments and training questions and your 5-star reviews. For a deeper dive into the science of endurance sports, listen to the Training Science Podcast and check out the adaptive AI training platform athletica.ai. Thanks for listening.